Following program is transcribed from an earlier network release.
And now, Dick Tracy!
This is Dick Tracy on the case of the Honorable Mr. Malice. Stand by for action. Let's go, men.
Yes, it's Dick Tracy, protector of law and order.
Before we join Dick Tracy, I'd like to ask you a question. Have you ever been so annoyed with something that you wanted very badly to change it? All right, did you change it or did you try? Because, well, I'd like to point out that this is the way things come to be invented and the way new businesses and industries start, the way we make progress. It's also the way fortunes are made. Take, for example, the beginning of the taxicab business. One evening, way back in 1907, 40 years ago, a young man here in New York City hailed a horse-drawn hansom cab. The address he gave to the driver was about 3/4 of a mile away. When he arrived at the address, the driver politely asked him for $5. Well, the young man paid it, but he didn't like it a bit. He made up his mind then and there that he would change this system where a driver could name his own price. The result? He started this country's first taxicab company using automobiles and taxi meters. He started it even though he had to visit Europe to get the cars and financial backing he needed. Today, a 3/4 mile taxi ride in New York City will cost you 30 cents. Things can be changed.
And now, Dick Tracy.
The latest relief train wreck has been accomplished by someone throwing incendiary bombs from a moving automobile. Someone who is believed by Dick Tracy to be left-handed. So, following a hunch, Tracy and Patton visited the home of the Honorable Benton Malice and were very excited to discover a photograph of the aforementioned Malice pitching in a 4th of July baseball game and pitching left-handed. Well, after a short but interesting conversation with Steve, old Malice's nephew, they left. And it came as quite a surprise to Steve to hear a voice close behind him say,
"Master Stephen."
Didn't hear you come up behind me. Where were you?
Just behind that door.
But why didn't you say something? Why didn't you come out when those two men were here?
Master Stephen, Mr. Malice would like to see you.
Well, sure. Where is he?
Come.
Ah, there you are, Stephen.
Oh, gee, Uncle Benton. Why didn't you come out and see Mr. Tracy and Mr. Patton? If you were here, you must have heard them.
I heard them. I heard a great deal. That's why I didn't come out.
But they said you asked them to come and see your trains.
I did. That was before I realized Mr. Patton was a common immigrant. Malice House has never yet, nor will it ever, play host to an immigrant.
I thought Mr. Patton was awful nice.
Well, so I noticed. That's what I want to talk to you about.
Yes, sir.
Stephen, you realize that although I am your uncle, I am under no obligation to either house or feed you.
Yes, Uncle Benton.
What I do for you, I do out of the goodness of my heart and out of consideration for the wishes of my poor dead sister.
I know, sir.
Therefore, Stephen, don't you think it strange that I should overhear you expressing disbelief in the things which I hold most sacred and expressing that disbelief to a common policeman and an immigrant?
But, Uncle Benton,
silence.
I don't...
I'm doing the talking. I realize, Stephen, that I cannot expect too much from the son of a foreigner. But I should have thought that you would have profited enough by my high example not to have been guilty of so grievous a fault. And what have you to say to that?
But, sir, the things Mr. Patton was saying sounded so right.
Stephen, in my household, what I think is right. Well, speak up. Don't just stand there like an innie.
I didn't realize how it would sound to you, sir. I only
Enough.
Thought that...
Don't talk back to your elders. Now tell me, where did you get this vicious belief that a naturalized American is as good as a native born?
From the Constitution, sir. It says that all people are created equal.
Rubbish. Means that all Americans have an equal right to try and become rich and powerful. But that's all it means.
But it says all people, not all Americans.
That was because the founders of this country had no means of knowing to what a sorry pass she would be dragged. Who in those glorious days could have dreamed that this great land of opportunity would be flooded with Poles and Italians and Hungarians and Chinese? You surely don't believe that the founding fathers meant to imply that such people as that could ever be the equal of real Americans?
That's what my father taught me.
Then let your father feed and house and clothe you.
But Uncle Benton, my father's dead.
I'm fully aware of that fact. And don't you ever forget it. Do you hear me? Don't you ever forget it.
No, sir. I'll never forget it.
All right, then. Go to your room. Try to do a little straight thinking for a change. I'll have more to say to you later. Oh, I don't know what to do with that boy. May have to send him to some corrective school. Some place that would bludgeon a sense of the value of democracy, the free way of life into him.
Is that a good idea, sir?
That's what we have to do with Europeans, Crawley. Ram democracy down their throats. And if they don't like it, well, by George, make them like it.
Quite right, sir.
Man lives not by bread alone, so they say. But I don't believe it. Starve their bellies and you can do what you want with their souls. Oh, how I fought down in Washington and shouted and begged. Yes, literally begged to make the fools say the truth.
You did, sir.
No, they said, we've got to cooperate. We've got to compromise. You can't sell democracy like toothpaste. You can't force an ideal. Horse feathers!
Exactly, sir.
Crawley, you get a thing three ways. First, someone gives it to you. Secondly, if they won't give it to you, you buy it. And thirdly, if they won't sell it, and if you're strong enough, you take it anyway.
That's elementary, sir.
Rule of the strong. Rule of the strong, Crawley. That's the only law that's worth having in the books. Well, we're strong. And we know that our kind of democracy is what we want every other country in the world to have.
Yes, sir.
By thunder, we gotta starve every mother's son of them till we get what we want. And you and I are trying to do just that, ain't Crawley?
And with admirable success, sir. That last wreck was a thing of beauty.
Yes, but we better lay low for a while. I didn't like something that fellow Tracy said while they were here.
You mean about noticing the photograph of you pitching for the local team?
Yes, he commented on the fact that I was pitching with my left hand. He and that Patton seemed to think it was significant.
You remember, sir, that you commented at the time of throwing the incendiary bombs that you couldn't do it if you weren't left-handed.
Yes, I know. I'd heard that this Tracy fellow had rather more intelligence than the average policeman, that he had, in fact, a certain sort of low animal cunning. Guess we better keep our eyes on him, Crawley. Who knows what opportunity may come our way.
Who indeed, sir?
Yes, Tracy will find out that it's one thing to tangle with robbers and pickpockets, and quite another thing to tangle with the Honorable Benton Malice.
Definitely, sir.
You know, Crawley, I shouldn't be at all surprised if Dick Tracy were to wake up dead one fine day.
Well, Dick, here she comes.
Yep, right on time.
Yeah, it's a 464 type locomotive. Looks like a Hudson.
Brother, what a little information will do to you.
Richard, I'll have you know that I have more than...
What was that you said, Pat?
Oh, skip it. But I definitely resent the implication that I'm a tyro when it comes to railroads. I learned plenty from poor old Johnson Barr.
You did, eh? Then maybe you can tell me the name of that last car coming up on this freight train.
Oh, that's a... Wait a minute. I've got it. It's a papoose.
You mean only Indians can ride in it?
Oh.
Oh, I imagine you mean caboose, and even that is only a layman's term. We railroaders prefer to call it the conductor's car.
There you go, showing off again.
Not at all. I'm just trying to stop you from spouting all that 464, 11187. It's a mogul-type mallet routine.
Well, I gotta do something to relieve the tedium. Nothing's happened in 5 days. Trains have gone through on schedule. Benton Malice has been keeping his nose clean and sticking to his committee work. You know, it sometimes makes me wonder if we may not be off on the wrong track.
No, Pat. I'm sure he's guilty. But I think he also knows that we're onto him. Something must have tipped him off.
You don't suppose his nephew said anything to him, do you?
Steve? What about? We didn't say anything in front of him that could have made him suspicious.
He was out of the room when we noticed the picture of Malice playing baseball left-handed. And besides, Pat, I don't think that young fellow's connected with this business at all.
He seemed like an awfully nice boy. Hey, I hope he comes to see me before we go back to town. I might be able to counteract some of the junk that the Honorable Benton is teaching him.
Yes, I'd like to talk to him again myself. But I'd rather not go to Malice House for a while. Pat, I want to lull the Honorable B.M. into a sense of false security, just as I think he's doing to his committee members.
Yeah, they've certainly been taking it easy lately. Not more than half of them are out on the tracks today. If it rains tonight, which it looks as though it might, I'll bet there won't be a handful out watching.
Which I think is exactly what Benton Malice wants. There's a particularly heavy shipment of relief supplies due to go through the valley tonight. A shipment that I think Malice has been waiting for.
So that's the way of it, is it?
Mm-hmm.
He'll probably drop into committee headquarters tonight and make a few casual remarks about the renegades being frightened back into their holes and that the committee has accomplished its purpose.
Right. And what with the rain falling and the cold wind, there'll be quite a few who'll be only too glad to think he's right.
Which means it'll be up to us.
That's about it. Well, are you ready for a little excitement?
Am I? I've been getting soft on this job. Handing out parking tickets is more active work than we've had here lately.
I have a feeling that that phase of it is just about over. I think you're going to get enough excitement tonight to last you a long time.
Look at that rain, Crawley.
It's just what you ordered, sir.
And down there in the valley, the lights glow cheerfully through the rain. The stupid fool sitting snug and dry inside.
The seed was planted very cleverly, sir.
Naturally. I doubt if more than two or three townsmen will be on the tracks. Should be easy for you to cruise up and down the tracks once or twice, determine a safe place to strike.
You're not forgetting Dick Tracy and Pat Patton, sir.
Indeed, I'm not. Although I think I soon will be able to.
Why, I don't follow you, sir.
Crawley, I think that this may very well be their last night on Earth.
In a moment, we'll return to Dick Tracy. But first, one radio actor who puts his all into his role is Billy Redfield, star of the Willie Piper Show, which is heard over most of these ABC stations every Thursday night. Although Billy is well aware that his listening audience can't see him, he lavishes upon each line all the facial expressions and gestures that would be called for in voicing it before a live audience. Or perhaps it's because Redfield does his part so thoroughly that his performance is completely convincing. While you chuckle through the humorous situations that arise in the Piper's New England household, you're never really aware that someone is acting the Willie Piper role. Billy Redfield is Willie Piper. He's only 20 years old. Young Redfield is a veteran of 11 years' experience on Broadway and in the radio. Last season, he played the lead in the George Abbott musical comedy, and theater audiences have seen him in many popular stage vehicles. As a matter of fact, all the characters of the Willie Piper Show are well cast. So when you're tuned in to Thursday night's Tales of Willie Piper, you're sure of enjoying a delightful, well-acted comedy. So listen tonight when Willie Piper is next heard over most of these same ABC stations. And now, back to Dick Tracy.
You mean, sir, that you have a scheme for killing Tracy and Patton?
I certainly have. Come inside, Crawley. Come inside. We have much planning to do.
What plan does the vicious Benton Malice have in mind? And will Dick Tracy run up against more than he bargained for? Better be sure to tune in tomorrow for The Adventures of Dick Tracy, heard overseas through the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is George Gunn speaking. Imagine a candid microphone like a candid camera catching people as they are. Well, on Candid Microphone, a program presented every Thursday evening over most ABC stations, you hear unrehearsed conversations that take place anywhere, on the street, restaurants, theater lobbies. When the conversations you hear actually take place, the people involved don't know that their every word is being transcribed by the man with a secret mic. Of course, no conversation is broadcast without their full consent. But you hear people speak spontaneously on subjects ranging from money to Mahatma Gandhi. Don't miss Candid Microphone tonight over most ABC stations.
Preceding transcribed, this is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.